Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket today, Chad Daybell's family speaks out. Second, charges for the death of Elijah McClain. What is it with politicians and kids? Fourth, a lot of people want to hurt their mother-in-law, but this guy took it just a little too far. And now it's not just Americans that are getting upset about wearing masks. The Canadians are getting in on the act as well. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. As you can tell, we are not in the Crime Talk studio. We jumped in Crime Talk 1 today, had to go do a little work, gonna try to turn it into a little pleasure. So here we are in a historic hotel, a secret location indeed. All right, let's get straight to the docket. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. All right, let's get straight to the docket. First on the docket, Chad Daybell's family speaks out. Well, Chad Daybell's five adult children spoke for the first time in an interview that aired last night on 48 Hours. We already knew from the previews that Chad's children believed that Chad was framed and they believed Tammy Daybell died of asphyxiation. Now, the first third of the episode was a good recap of everything that had gone down with the Vallow Daybell matter. The CBS reporter asked the children some pretty good questions, things that we've all been dying to know the answers to. First, how did you process Lori and Chad's marriage? To which the children replied that they were shocked and confused. They do believe that Chad had an emotional affair with Lori while Tammy was still alive, but don't believe Chad would be capable of having a physical affair because of their strong religious beliefs. And then the reporter asked the five children if they think Chad had anything to do with the death of his wife, Tammy Daybell, their mother, to which all five children said they never questioned whether or not Chad killed Tammy. They know he would not be capable and that he loved her very much. The children were then asked if they knew that Lori had two children when their father married her. Garth said that he did not know about JJ or Tylee until investigators showed up at his work asking him questions about their disappearance. That's interesting. Chad's daughter Emma had the most speaking time in the episode of all the children. She recounts the moment where Chad is being arrested and put in a police car. She said that Chad asked Emma, "Do you know why they are arresting me?" Emma said, "Dad, they found human remains." Emma then said his eyes got wide-faced, pale, and he looked shocked. I wonder if she's listened to that audio recording. Well, the reporter then asked the children if they ever questioned their father about JJ and Tylee when there was a nationwide search for the children. Chad's children said they had, and that Chad's only response was that he could not tell them because he was keeping JJ and Tylee safe. Oh my gosh, how is that for incriminating? He's keeping them safe? Oh boy, now the kids are more than likely going to be witnesses against their dad. In regards to the infamous shooting of the raccoon and the text messages that Chad had sent to Tammy on the day in question, Tylee went missing, Garth sticks up for his father and says that they had a raccoon problem for some time and that the traps they were using were too small. So they were starting to shoot the raccoons instead. Now, the reporter reminds the kids that, hey, the investigators never found a raccoon in the search of the pet cemetery. Emma says that there are actually two pet cemeteries and that the other one was never searched. I guess they're going to go back. Chad's children did say that they got death threats on Facebook because of all of everything that's happening with their father. And they want to remind people that neither they nor their father were involved with the deaths of JJ and Tylee, and that they do feel bad that Tylee and JJ are now deceased. Emma continued to say that she is confident that Alex and Lori framed Chad and that Alex would come over to their house, often unannounced, and no one knew what he was doing. When asked by the children at the end, how could Chad be surrounded by such evil and not know it? To which the children responded, he was fooled. Chad was being labeled as a cult leader, and the children say that, well, if he was a cult leader, wouldn't he have started with his own children? The episode asks at the end, basically, who do you think was the mastermind? Chad, the cult leader, who pulled the strings on the sidelines, or was it Lori, the beautiful blonde black widow who used her sex appeal to get people to do her dirty work? A couple things that jump out at me in this interview are the fact that Chad DeBell has made statements that are admissions. They can be used against him. And the children, if they weren't already witnesses, will now be based upon that statement that he was keeping JJ and Ty Lee safe. The other thing, I told you, from a defense attorney perspective, the thing that they're going to have to do is pin it on Lori for Chad to walk, which I think is getting much more difficult as time goes by. Chad is going to have to run a defense of he's duped. And I'm sure the children have talked to the attorney, and that's the gist of their defense. We'll see if it holds up in front of a jury. All right, next on the docket, charges for the death of Elijah McClain. A Colorado grand jury has decided to indict the officers and paramedics involved in the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. Three Aurora police officers and two paramedics have been indicted on multiple charges in the death of McClain, a 23-year-old black man put into a chokehold and injected with ketamine in a fatal encounter with police. Police were responding to a 911 call about a suspicious person when they stopped McClain on August 24th of 2019 as he walked home from a grocery store. The encounter escalated and Officer Woodward allegedly applied a chokehold on McClain, causing him to briefly lose consciousness. McClain could be heard on body cam saying that he couldn't breathe while the three officers allegedly held him on the ground while he was vomiting several times. When paramedics arrived on the scene, they injected McClain with a powerful sedative, ketamine. According to the indictment, the amount that the paramedics injected would be enough for a 210-pound person, and Elijah McClain was only 143 pounds. The city of Aurora did an independent review of the incident and found that the actions by the police and paramedics ultimately led to Elijah's cardiac arrest and ultimate death. Now, the Aurora Police Department defends their officer, saying that Elijah had been wearing a ski mask that night. That's the basis for the suspicious contact. But it's also public knowledge that Elijah McClain had some issues, probably autistic. And just because you act a little unusual doesn't mean that it's criminal conduct. So, officers Randy Rodema, Nathan Woodward, and Jason Rosenblatt, and paramedics Jeremy Cooper and Peter Sinichek were each charged with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. Officer Rodema and Rosenblatt were additionally charged with second-degree assault with the intent to cause bodily injury and one count of a crime of violence sentencing enhancer related to the assault charge. Cooper and Sinichek each faced three additional counts of second-degree assault. None of the defendants have yet been arraigned on the indictment, but undoubtedly there will probably be a trial. Next on the docket, what is it with politicians and kids? Alderman from Wisconsin, who was on the city council for nearly two decades, a guy by the name of Paul C. Lawrence, was arrested and charged with felony possession of inappropriate photos of minors. The criminal complaint filed in Dane County Circuit Court stated that when officers executed the warrant on Lawrence's home, the search appeared to have been interrupted because Lawrence was watching videos featuring two teenage boys having sex. The complaint didn't specify whether the boys in the particular video were underage or not. I'm not sure I've gotten rid of everything I should have. I have been ashamed of when I've looked at some of this stuff, Lawrence told the police officers. Lawrence then went on to further explain that he had maybe downloaded several hundred images, some of which depicted children, but claimed he was currently only in possession of only 10 to 15 images, and he knew that that was still probably over the line. Yes, it is, Alderman. Well, Lawrence allegedly added that he had seen here on the sites, which he watched daily, and mostly featured homosexual acts. but the suspect allegedly claimed that he had only been actively seeking out the illegal material for about a year or a year and a half, so I guess that makes it okay. Not really. So Lawrence's attorney, a guy by the name of Darren Crawford, wanted to remind the public and media that at this point, the case against his client is just an allegation. I can totally respect that, and we will give him the presumption of innocence. But those allegations to date include 5 counts of possession of child pornography, and that does carry a minimum prison sentence of 3 years. What is it with politicians and kids? Just can't seem to figure it out.
Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did.
All right. If anyone's ever been married, they probably at some point or another thought about maybe hurting their mother-in-law. Well, this guy took it just a little bit too far. A 24-year-old Kentucky man by the name of Nathan Hayab has been arrested after he allegedly stabbed his mother-in-law with a sword. Allgaier and Hayab got into an argument, and then Allgaier initially locked herself in a second floor bedroom. Hayab forced the door open and they went to another room where they retrieved the sword. According to the police report, that while Hayab went into the other room, Allgaier went back downstairs into the dining room and Hayab followed. Police said she told him to get out, but instead he stabbed her with the sword. According to the police, they located Hayab not far from the home, and they also found the sword nearby. Now, Stacy Allgaier, 45, was airlifted to the Cincinnati Medical Center for treatment because she had life-threatening injuries. Now, the victim's daughter, Sarah Elizabeth Trentman, said that her mother was recovering after surgery and is in stable condition. Hayab is apparently married to another of the victim's daughter, and they live in Virginia. That's certainly going to make those holiday gatherings a little awkward, don't you think? You can't go around using swords against people, ladies and gentlemen. All right, next on the docket. Yes, we thought it was just the Americans that were all spun up about masks. Well, the Canadians are getting in on it as well. A man in British Columbia peed on the counter of a Dairy Queen because employees asked him to wear a mask. The exchange went something like, "We ask you to follow the rules." "What are the rules?" The defendant said, "We can't sell you anything without a mask." "Why?" the man answered. He said, "It's a policy." The man then said, "It's not a policy." The man then freaks out and pees on the counter. Obviously, the employees were not pleased because somebody has to clean that up. A photo was released by the British police to help find the man. The roommate of the man who got this all on video said in an interview, "People who often make these kinds of stories of their extreme behavior do have experience of mental health issues. They do have substance abuse issues, or they live in a paranoid state." Hopefully he can get some help, but needless to say, once again, ladies and gentlemen, you can't pee on the counter if somebody asks you to wear a mask. It's a private business. They can ask you to wear a mask. If you don't want to wear a mask, guess what? They don't have to serve you. I think that holds up in Canada just like it would here in the United States. All right. Finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Chloe Rozak. She's 24 and she's being held by the Honolulu Police Department following her arrest on Saturday. The Illinois woman is accused of falsifying a vaccine card to get on a plane for her Hawaiian vacation. Authorities say that her spelling mistake is what gave her away. As they were going through, they noticed and they flagged her because the word Moderna had been misspelled. Instead of M-O-D-E-R-N-A, she wrote out M-A-D-E-R-N-A. She also provided some false information regarding where she would be staying on her trip. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not that big of a deal whether you get vaccinated or you don't get vaccinated. The bottom line is there's still some rules. You may not like them or not, but when I recently went to Turks and Caicos, you had to show a negative test. Yes, it was a pain, it was inconvenient, but I had that negative COVID test because I wanted to go to Turks and Caicos. Sometimes the rules, you just gotta do it, or you're gonna spend a lot of time and money litigating in court, and that's just not what you wanna do. So, Ms. Rozak, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day, and well, not because you're trying to get into Hawaii. Who wouldn't go to Hawaii? But the reality of it is you can't spell. So maybe you are, in fact, just dumb. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.